Hey there, just want to give you a quick heads up before this week's episode. We are going on the road. We'll be at the 2018 Sanibel Island Writers Conference on Friday, November 9th at 4 p.m. I'll be joined by three of the conference participants on stage in the theater at Big Arts on Sanibel, each telling one song story with speed rounds for some of the other stuff. There are still tickets available, so check out their website if you want to be a part of the audience during that recording. All righty then, on with the show.
One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the podcast that introduces you to people through the lens of the songs that have touched their lives. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. Our guest this episode is Stephen Britton. Stephen's been in Southwest Florida since the early 60s when he moved here with his mom and siblings. He's worked in the tech world since the mid-70s, including stints with the company that founded Lehigh Acres, the Florida Department of Health, and these days the Lee County Elections Office. Introduced to church music at an early age, Stephen became a choir director for the first time when he was just 19 years old. Over the years, he's served as choir director and organist for Baptist, Unitarian, MCC, and Episcopal congregations. Stephen first came to our attention during our interview for this show with Megan Kissinger. She mentioned a friend who had a full-fledged pipe organ built into his house. Stephen says a chance meeting in his early 20s with a local retired banker and theater organ enthusiast began his love affair with the theater pipe organ. Now his house is home to a 25-rank Wurlitzer theater pipe organ that was once installed in Chicago and later in San Francisco. His house, which he describes as having a studio-like setting, is also home to five grand pianos and an eclectic mix of antiques and historical items, including things like early phonographs, a jukebox, old clocks, and a cat named Opus. Hey there, Stephen.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Likewise.
We'll get to the pianos and the cats and stuff in a bit. But so the part of the bio that I cut out said that, you know, due to your work as a choir director and as an organist, you really didn't have any holidays or weekends off for a very long time. So when did that end? And now what do you do with your holidays and weekends?
Well, having started as a musician when I was 19, there was no Christmas or Easter were just really terrible times for a musician. And when I went to work for the elections office in 2015, elections are such that you really have to be there if there's work to be done. So it was the appropriate time to stop doing church music. So I think I finished sometime around 2016.
So fairly recently.
Fairly recently, yeah. And now I wake up, I go to St. Mattress by the Springs and stay home and get stuff done at the house. There's
nice.
Always a project.
So let's talk some about this pipe organ. What does 25 rank mean? Is that like does that equate to how many pipes there are or something like that?
In a roundabout way, a rank is a voice.
Okay.
So if you have a trumpet and an oboe and a string, that would be three ranks. Usually a rank means a minimum of 61 individual pipes. So my instrument happens to have 1,765 pipes.
Really?
In a 27 feet wide by 14 and a half foot deep chamber at one end of my living room.
So each rank needs its own series of pipes.
Absolutely.
That covers the entire spectrum of the octaves that it's going to.
A pipe can only make one sound. It only has one job.
Boo!
It's crazy.
Mind blown. That's all news to me. How uncommon is it for a person to have such an organ in their house?
From what I've been told, it's the largest instrument in a residence south of Great Falls, Virginia. It's crazy.
So very uncommon.
It's rare. There are people that have smaller versions and some that were built for practice instruments. I know two or three people in Florida that have them, but none are the breadth and scope of this instrument.
How did it come to you?
I heard about it. This particular instrument, and my home already had a small instrument in it from the previous owner who had befriended me when I was 23.
A small instrument like a?
Like 15 ranks of Wurlitzer.
Oh, okay.
And when I moved into that home shortly before his death, that instrument was beginning to need repair. Instruments like fine wine and other fine pieces of art have an opus number, and the opus number indicates that it was built by a certain builder and it's complete. I wanted a complete instrument, not one built from parts. And one became available in California. And I sent a representative out to look at it. And I purchased it weeks after Hurricane Wilma came through and drove it.
So like mid-2000s?
It was 2005.
Gotcha.
And brought it home in two trucks from California at the height of the gas crisis.
And costing you 60 cents a mile to drive it probably?
It cost $17,000 to bring it home.
Wow.
That was the price of the two trucks and the trip. But it's a labor of love. I feel like I am the caretaker for my time on the planet. And so it stays in my home and very happy. We show it to a lot of people. I get phone calls often. Do not publish my phone number.
Are you the caretaker of it? Is there someone that you can hire to do that? How do you do that?
You can do minimal work yourself. You can do tuning and minor repair. I usually will have a tuner come in once a year or so and do the special work. But you become very adept at what has to be done. It's all leather, glue, lumber, and some pipes.
And it's wind. I mean, there's air. Are there big fans? There are big pumps?
There's a 10-horsepower motor in the blower room that's housed in a steel case, and this thing runs. It sounds like a turbine. It's actually the most frightening part of the instrument, and it supplies 23 inches of water displacement in a tube. So if I had a J-tube with water, it would move it up 23 inches. And Florida Power and Light sends me a thank you note every month. It's actually three-phase power, so I have to have a special device.
You have to have a special box for it.
A variable frequency device that creates fake three-phase power for the instrument.
Well, fascinating. Okay, well, we asked you to send us a bit of you playing it, so we're going to hear that now. I don't have to set this up. You'll know exactly what it is, but let's hear a little bit of Stephen Britton playing his pipe organ off McGregor in Fort Myers. So what do your neighbors think?
Well.
Or you have a big lot?
Not particularly. The walls of the house were filled with sand.
Oh, so it's built to be as.
It sounds like a TV's being played too loudly inside.
Oh, so you can just sit there and rock out.
Unless they open the garage door and then you can hear it at McGregor Boulevard. When I hear that, I can't believe that that's mine. It's just an amazing feeling to know that I'm the one taking care of that.
How often do you play it? Like all the time?
A couple days a week.
Yeah. Huh. How often do you learn new songs?
Not as often as I should.
Yeah.
Because people want to hear the same, what you call the war horses, you know.
Right, right.
Play something from Phantom.
Did you ever say, take me out to the ball game?
All the time. You never know what you're going to be asked to play.
Okay, let's jump back to your childhood. What was the musical background of your childhood?
I was blessed to have a mother who was a coloratura.
What's that?
A coloratura is the soprano in the stratosphere. That's unfortunate. Yes, way high. Usually the big lady in front, but she was not a big lady. And she was professionally trained prior to my birth. And when she came to Little Lehigh Acres in 1962 and married what became my father, she sang in the local church choir. My grandfather, who was the Baptist minister, thought he'd hit pay dirt because she had a voice and could sing, and it was just amazing. So I grew up, I told someone recently that my first sing-along with mom, I'm told, was classical opera, Puccini, Verdi. I don't remember it, but I'm told that's what my early beginnings were.
What about like popular music around the house or on the radio or on turntables?
We had all sorts of material. You know, again, this was a very small town.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't even imagine Lehigh Acres in the 60s. I remember Lehigh Acres in the 80s.
And it was built, really I think it was started around 1955.
I had no idea it went back that far.
I'm there 7 years into it. Everything was brand new and pristine. But there were only two radio stations that I can remember in Fort Myers, WMYR 1440, 1410 rather, and the AM station played all the hits of the day, the top 40 songs, and we got them 6 months after they were released up north. It took that long for them to become popular here. And so that's what we listened to, and everybody carried a transistor radio in their pocket.
Can you remember the first time that music moved you?
I think the first one would probably be the first piece of material that I submitted to you. Oh. And I remember always being involved in it and always having a connection to it. And I had a grandmother that I was very – my mother's mother that I was very close to. And I was the first grandson and the first of child of their only daughter. So we were very close. And we – when I was with her – I was allowed to play her hi-fi, and that was a big deal for me. So
was that up north still?
That was here.
Oh, that was here. So grandma was here too.
She had moved here, I think, in 59 or 60.
So you followed grandma down?
We came down for a vacation and never went home.
Stephen, we have the same story, you and I. I moved here because my grandparents moved here, and then my mom moved here with me and my brother and sister. So there we go.
Mom came on a train with three of us. I was four, my sister was two, and my brother 6 months old. And she came here because it would be the last time that she would get to take a vacation being unbridled by the school calendar. I was going to start first grade in Irvington, New Jersey. And we came here alone, stayed with her parents. And when my biological father came to retrieve us, they had a big argument. Hmm. And she realized that the marriage was over. And my grandfather told him to get on a plane and fly home, and he did. And he told my mom, she said, she'll cool off and come back in a few days, and we never did. Hmm. She stayed here, filed for divorce, later remarried, and it was really a perfect story for her. She was very happy.
Hmm. So this song that you were listening to with your grandma, what was it called?
The first one was In My Garden. It's an Ida Bell Firestone piece. I didn't know much about it when I was a kid, except it was my mother's recordings. Mom had, as I mentioned earlier, had done concert work, primarily in conjunction with her music lessons. In that time period, you took music lessons, and then the music teacher gave a recital annually. And all of her students, in formal gowns with hired accompanists and the whole business, went to basically an auditorium and held a recital. And sometime, I'm guessing prior to 1955, a recording was made of her three 78s. And I liked them. And so when I was with my grandmother, I would say, Nana, can I play Mom's records? And she would let me. And they were 78s. And I remember the hi-fi was spastic at that speed, you know, the mechanism going all over the place. And this In My Garden was one of my favorites. And I think I liked it because my grandmother told me the story when they recorded it live at the concert hall. The air conditioning had broken down at the Griffith Piano Company in Newark, New Jersey, where they had an auditorium for public recitals. So the windows were open. And in one spot in the song, my mother sings a phrase, there's a musical interlude, and a car horn in the street below goes beep, beep. And as a very young kid, she told me, listen for the beeps. And they're there as plain as day. When I play this piece of music now, kind of as a tribute to my mom, I add the beeps on the organ.
And which voice do you use?
I use an English post horn, and I play F and A together, and it sounds like a car horn. The recordings that my mother had were not stored properly over the years, and they were basically acetates, you know, a 78 acetate on a like an aluminum base, mm-hmm. and so they have not survived. But I guess this leads into the part where a dear friend of mine, after her death in 2015, a buddy of mine in Detroit, Pierre Fracalanza, was talking to me on the computer, on Facebook, and said, are there any songs that remind you of your mother? And I said, oh, Ida Bell Firestone's In My Garden. And several weeks later, I got a file, and it was him playing this piece of music, which was not only touching, but it took me right back to hearing it and loving it when I was a kid.
All right, let's listen to it. This is In My Garden by Ida Bell Firestone, performed by pianist, say his name again,
Pierre Fracalanza.
All right. As someone who spends as much time at a keyboard as you do, that song probably has a lot of different layers of memory and meaning for you. Not only does it take you back to your mom, but I saw you during the...
It's pretty complicated musically.
Yeah.
And there's a spot there where as it goes into the first phrase where it changes keys, and it's a very interesting chord. It's an open fifth, and I think it's D flat. I'm not sure, but it's gorgeous. And so I listen for that. I'm one of those people, I get teased for this all the time. I don't have music playing in my home when you come to visit, because if it was playing in the background and I hear a phrase, I will stop in mid-sentence and do this. Watch, listen for this blank spot. And I'll say, excuse me, I just get, it's really, I don't listen to music during dinner. It's very much a distraction.
Is that like the case if you're in your car, like no matter when music is around you? Because I have a friend who's really into music theory, and he's always deconstructing something.
Well, I do that. You do that. And as a musician, you know, you look for a certain phrase or a pattern, or you look for maybe a grace note. And if you hear a grace note, you know that you need to hear it again. That if it's a good composition, once is a mistake, twice is it was intentional. And it's usually when I'm having conversation with other people.
What is a grace note?
A grace note is where you might go, you start on a B and up to a C immediately, moving from one note to the next in a hurry. And you hear it in classical music a lot and in popular music as well. But I can't really carry on a conversation, an in-depth conversation with somebody else with this other input coming in. I don't know if it's just me or maybe I need professional help. I'm not sure.
Does that mean that you don't really listen to music around the house even when other people aren't there? Do you have
– Oh, if it's not me playing it, I don't listen to it. Now, that's not entirely true. That sounds terribly ostentatious. But what I listen to, nobody else would want to hear. So I would never have a group over and be serving dinner or talking with friends and have something on the turntable because they would just say, what is that garbage?
So, interesting. So you're more of a producer of music than a consumer of music probably.
Probably so. Huh. I like to listen to a lot of theater. I like to listen to tight harmonies. I like to listen to the high-lows from the 50s, the Manhattan Transfer, things that I tell people I zoned out about 1980 and stopped listening to music. So,
okay. Well, that takes care of several of my future potential questions. So what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid? What were you hoping toward?
You know, I didn't really think I had anything specific. I was fortunate enough. I sang in my grandfather's church choir starting on Mother's Day, 1971. And I knew I liked music, but I knew I didn't want to make a career out of it. And if any of my musician friends hear this, I'm probably in big trouble. But it can be a real cutthroat kind of business. It can be, I play better than you, or you're better than me, or you don't do church right. And I didn't want any part of that. I was fortunate enough that the man that sat two seats from me in the church choir was the director of human resources for the first company that I went to work for.
Out in Lehigh.
Yep. And I went to Mr. Johnson one day and I said, I want to work with computers. And he said, fine, show up here on November 4th or 5th, November 5th, 1975. And I went to work. And literally, computer operator trainee, $2.65 an hour. And you could do that then. There was a logical progression from
right.
Entry-level jobs.
There wasn't an infinite world already there that you had to find a way into.
You know, I tell people I'm probably the last generation of people that can be an information technology director without a college degree.
So that was straight on from there?
Stayed there. The nice thing about it is that it was – even in the day, it was lucrative. I was able to own a home and a car and I didn't spend frivolously, but I never really had to – squeeze and pinch pennies and live on ramen noodles like so many people do.
Right.
But so that worked out. But I sort of wanted to be a technician in the technology field that afforded me the ability to do music when I wanted to.
It sounds like you struck pretty good balance in that regard.
It worked out really well.
What about the connection between the math and technology and the math and computers? There's probably some analogs there in your brain.
You might as well have you could be the poster child for this, that people have said that many, many times. I have many, many friends that are organists, pianists, and programmers and technical people. It's I don't know whether it's a right or a left brain thing, but they're very much the same
way. Like our director, Richard.
Same thing, yeah. Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the first music that you owned yourself when you were a kid a young person?
My mother purchased for me on a birthday. I'd have to check to see what year it was, but she purchased Petula Clark's Don't Give Up and The Occasions singing I'm a Girl Watcher on 245s. And I played them until they're gray, and I still have them, and they're both in my jukebox, the original copies. And I liked to sing along. My brothers and sisters and I would sing, my sisters, my two sisters in particular. And it was just a nice way to grow up, a lot of music.
How much music is in your jukebox? That's from what era?
It's a 1961 Wurlitzer. And the reason I wanted that is because it was built in the exact same factory
as
the 1927 pipe organ sitting 20 feet away. But I think there's, 100 records in there. And I swap them out. And they're easy to find on eBay. So every now and then I'll hear something and I'll say, oh, I'd like a copy of that. And a couple of clicks and a 45 shows up.
And is it pretty easy to maintain?
Oh, yeah. I have a local friend that's kind of good at it, and I will often say, hey, come take a look at this.
Does it still have the original speakers in it?
Yep.
And it still sounds good?
Yeah. I've had the amp has been recapped, they call it, but it sounds pretty good. Hmm. It's fun to watch. It's mechanical.
Yeah, I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about live music? Have you seen much live music over the years, or were you too busy leading church choirs?
Most of the time, and that was one of the things is, live music is usually Friday and Saturday
yeah,
nights.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah.
But I did a lot of accompanying for Edisonia early on.
Okay.
I did a lot of accompanying for soloists. And Saturday night at 10 o'clock, I headed to bed because I had to be up and not late on Sunday morning. So I've accompanied a lot of choirs and a lot of soloists. I got my first church job. I was sitting in a jury room downtown, and a woman that I had known since I was about 6 years old was sitting four seats in front of me talking to a woman that she had just basically introduced herself. And about 10 minutes into it, she turned around and saw me four or five rows back, and she waved. And she turned to the woman she was sitting with and said, that's my friend Stephen. He's a pianist. And this woman was a soloist at First Baptist Church. Her name was Lynn. And she was looking for someone to transpose a piece of music for a revival that was coming up. And so I did it for her. We're still friends on Facebook to this day. So it's fun stuff like that.
But what about concerts like that you went to, Mr. I always make music and don't think about consuming it?
Well, see, this is where I can back out of this gracefully. Fort Myers in 1975, when I was a teenager, had nothing.
Right.
We got concerts on Tuesdays or Mondays and sometimes Thursdays.
Where would that have been at the time? Like Hall of 50 States downtown?
Could
maybe?
Have been the exhibition hall. Elvis
was there.
The Quonset Hut, we used to call it. There was nothing out this far. And
the Civic Center wouldn't have been there yet,
right? That was built about the time I was graduated. About 1975 was when I remember it being built. But there was nothing like that. I went to a Heart concert at the Civic Center one time and was so surprised to see so much gray smoke on the top floor of the building. It's amazing.
And for the youngins out there, the Civic Center was downtown, basically about where Harborside is now, kind of halfway Harborside, halfway. Well, where the new hotel's going probably.
Exactly.
Well, let's move on to song number two. Oh,
okay. This is, again, we've moved to Lehigh Acres. Actually, we've discovered that we're staying in Lehigh Acres. We haven't moved there. We're now staying there. And my mother went to work for the company that was building Lehigh Acres as a secretary for the night sales department. I think she told me she made $25 a week or something. It was some ridiculous amount of money. And they told her, they got to know her, and they said, look, if you're looking for a house, we've got one here that's been foreclosed upon. If you pay the back payments and keep the current payments up, we'll let you move in. And that was a dream come true for a generation of renters.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents had never owned a home till they came here. I think they told me their home here in Lehigh Acres, my grandparents' home new was $6,000 on a lake. And so my mom and I went and looked at this place together. It was near the end of April 1963, and we moved in May 1st. And it was pretty bare. It was a two-bedroom, one bath, eating galley kitchen and a living room, and we had no television. So my mother, again, transistor radio was it? I can remember it was a elongated like a loaf of bread radio in a brown leather case, and tuned again to our local AM station, and they played Top 40. Well, I later learned that in January of that year, Peggy March had recorded a piece of music that had become a big hit. Was released in March, I believe. And we heard about it sometime in May, June, July of that year. And every time I turned around, I was hearing that song, every single time. And was really tickled when I heard it was released again and used in a movie, part of Sister Act. But we sang I Will Follow Him all the time. And my favorite part of this story is that later in life, as recently as 3 years ago, my friends, a husband and wife on the East Coast in Plantation, met her and knew her.
Oh, really?
Yes, and invited her to come for his wife's birthday and do a concert for 28 people. And
so you were among them?
I was seated at her table.
Wow.
And she is charming.
See this picture radio people?
Exactly. There's a picture radio. She's charming.
Uh-huh.
And I sat with she and her husband, who is now deceased. And she was kind, and she was fun. And I told her that I had brought my 45 RPM recording with me, which she was kind enough to sign, radio people. And
we'll make sure to get those pictures on the website.
Yeah, so we'll share these.
Go to 3songstories.org, and you'll see the picture of the record and the photo right there on the site.
But she was very kind to me. And, of course, I told her that my earliest experience growing up in Lehigh Acres was hearing that song almost ad nauseum because it was – I mean, literally, I think they only had 15 records at the station. And I recall hearing it multiple times during the day.
Well, let's listen to it. This is I Will Follow Him by – is it Little Peggy March?
Little Peggy March.
All right. Let's hear it.
I will follow him. Follow him wherever he may go. There isn't an ocean too deep, a mountain so high it can't keep me away. I must follow him.
Follow him.
Ever since he touched my hand, I knew.
So did you enjoy being back in Lehigh Acres there for a little while?
Yeah, I remembered as I was hearing this is that I remember being aware of orchestration probably for the first time. And in that piece, there's a spot where the strings do this slide between the I Love Hymns, and they do this slide on the string. And I remember hearing that and thinking, that was pretty cool. How do I replicate that in my head? But yeah, I'm a little kid and standing in the hallway, and my mom's home, it's pretty bare, and long time ago, geez.
And it's interesting when you describe the transistor radio as having like a leather case. Like they all had leather cases back then.
Yeah, yeah, it had, because that, you know, you slipped it in there. That way you could take it to the beach.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Now you've established that you sing, that you've sung in choirs and things mm-hmm. like that. Do you sing while you're playing the organ? Or are you more of just an instrumentalist in that regard?
With the organ, there's not many theater organists that sing.
Okay. Yeah,
I can think of one. You're kind of busy.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You're dealing with three keyboards, a pedal board, and on my instrument, 214 individual control knobs.
Right.
So I don't have time to sing. But I did play a couple of times in nightclubs here locally.
Okay.
And I did
– like on like a portable or
– oh, grand piano. I'm an acoustic kind of guy.
Gotcha.
And so – and I accompanied myself for that. Met some fabulous friends that I still have to this day that remember those days in the 80s. But working in a bar is difficult when you have to go to church the next morning. And
what are your go-to songs if you were going to sing something and play it?
Oh, my gosh. Since I Fell for You, which is an old ballad. When Sunny Gets Blue is another old ballad. And those are the things that I enjoyed playing. But I don't consider – I have one of those accompanist kind of sounding voices. I don't think it's a solo voice.
What about karaoke?
Done it one time, decided that if the rest of the world wants to do it, they can. I've done it. I think I've done it. I know I've done it one time. And I remember what I sang and where I was. But
what was it?
Brandy, You're a Fine Girl by The Looking Glass. But just never saw. I really never wanted to put myself out there as a soloist, to be honest with you.
Okay. I was going to ask, and I am going to ask, if there are any TV theme song jingles that you can recall, but I'm going to jump past that for a second, and we're going to get to that Sam Galloway jingle.
I was afraid of that.
So I wasn't kidding when I said I was mm-hmm. going to bring it back up. So you spent a little time in AM radio back in the 70s or the 80s,
yep,
you said,
yeah.
And you recorded a few jingles.
Yeah, my sister and
how
I.
How did that Sam Galloway one go?
I suddenly hate you. But a company, and I want to say it was in North Fort Myers, a guy last name was Rogers, did it. And the Sam Galloway Ford commercial was, Sam Galloway Ford, you'll make you so happy, try it and you'll see. And the tagline was, hang a hug on me. And my sister and another gal and I recorded it. And I remember hearing it used once. This would have been 1983, 1984. We also sang for North First Bank. And that was the first time I'd ever been in a studio where they could punch in a certain word. As you sang a word, if there was a thing they didn't like, they could have you sing it again and just plop in that word.
That was a pretty fancy technical thingamajigger for the time, probably.
I sang North First Bank maybe 300 times that night. North First Bank. Nope, they don't like it. North First Bank. Sing it again. But it was pretty amazing technology. But it was a lot of fun. Good experience. That's why I did it.
What about TV theme songs?
Well, I never did any. But TV theme song, I always liked the Mannix theme, if you can go back that far. It's a 3-4 waltz, which is unusual. 3-4 jazz waltz, which is unusual.
I love how you see everything through the lens of musical composition.
It's
beautiful.
You hear that and you like that. And I liked all the things. I never particularly can think of one that was particularly appealing to me. They all sort of set the stage, and of course they become synonymous with the program. So as soon as you hear, the theme song to Friends, you know exactly what's, you don't have to be in the room. And I'm a big I Love Lucy fan, so I've learned all of the iterations of the Lucy themes.
I
think there were three. And so I'll play those from time to time. The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour, On With The Show, This Is It. It's a great theater organ piece. It starts a program beautifully because everybody knows it.
Do you have a favorite band? It says you kind of gave up paying attention in 1980 or so. So I don't know.
I was more of a solo solo vocalist kind of
gotcha.
Guy. And not me personally, but that's what I in the time period when I was growing up, I was listening to a lot of Elton John.
Uh-huh.
And a lot, believe it, I'm going to get teased by this, a lot of Barry Manilow. I'm a big Neil Sedaka fan. And actually, he's kind of on my bucket list to meet someday because I went to one of his concerts here with my mom several years ago. And I was able to sit where I could see him at the piano, just happenstance. And I know all his material. I know what key it's in. And at 78 years old or whatever, he was singing his original compositions in their original keys. I was stunned. And I could see it. I know where his hands were. And so I've always been kind of impressed by that. But I listen to just about anything 1980 prior, and I'm okay with it.
Was there a fourth song that almost made it to this list today that you had to cut?
Wow. There may have been. I can't think of anything in particular because this was hard. As I told you in the parking lot, this is not easy to do. And when Megan said, you're going to get an email from Mike, I thought, oh, this will be fun. I'll snap off. It's not. To find a song that has a specific meaning and invokes a memory. I mean, you know, we all know what we were doing when, you know, when Kennedy was assassinated, for example. But finding a song that had a meaning, that had something that was had some meat in it, is not easy. And so I wrote things down, and then I erased things, and I actually typed up my entire, because I'm OCD like that. And
your entire what?
I typed up everything about these three songs.
Oh, right.
I haven't had a look at it though. But no, there were a lot of other things I liked, but nothing invoked the kind of emotion that what I've heard done so far.
All right, it's time for your third song.
Oh boy, this is a little complicated. When I was 23, I heard about a man with a pipe organ in his house in Fort Myers. I was enthralled, and I actually got a clue where it was, and I drove up and down the street figuring I could see a house that had a – I figured I was smart enough at 23.
Sure. It couldn't just be hidden in a normal house.
Exactly. So I drove up and down the street and didn't know that the road went on the other side of McGregor Boulevard, so I missed 30 houses. So I finally got a local gentleman that had known my family since the 40s, and he made an introduction, called me, and I went to Mr. Walter Drawn's home February 1st, 1980. I'm real funny about dates, too. And carrying some Reader's Digest condensed music books under one arm. I left his home at 1 o'clock that morning. I could not pull myself off the bench playing this hybrid Wurlitzer that he had built there from parts. And he was my sort of a mentor and a friend. He did some crazy things for me. Being the oldest of four, you know, I had to share grandparents and parents, but he was like a private grandfather. And I called him Mr. Drawn for about a year. And one day I noticed he had all this old hi-fi equipment in his living room. And I said, Mr. Drawn, if I learn enough songs on the pipe organ, can we make a tape so I can let my friends? And he said, Stephen, you learn a couple of songs, and we'll make a good tape. It was about 3 weeks later I came over because I was going over every Thursdays and Saturdays for 18 years. And one day I got to his house, and in the corner of the living room on a card table was all brand new equipment. There were Acoustic Research speakers, which were expensive at the time. I remember one was $418, and there were four of them. He had purchased a mixing board, a new Onkyo amplifier, and a cassette deck. And I said, what's all this? And he said, well, if we're going to make a recording, we ought to make a good one. And I realized that I had re-energized his passion for this. He was a single, never married man, lived alone. I actually lived with his sister and mother in the house next door. And I revitalized his interest in this. And he would stand behind me and say, no, the rhythm's not right. Try this. And he provided me with cassette tapes. Remember those?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he would hand them to me and say, listen to this style. And so it was through that, for Christmas one year, he gave me three recordings by local artist Billy Nall, N-A-L-L-E. If you live in North Fort Myers, you may have heard of Nall Gray.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are distant cousins, I understand. Billy Nall went to Fort Myers High and had graduated during wartime, had gone through Juilliard on a three-year program, and then into the Navy, I believe, to play music for shows. He left that, ended up in TV and radio in Manhattan, and ended up in the later part of his life being the artist in residence in Wichita, Kansas, playing the Wurlitzer organ out of the Paramount Theater in New York. He was born here, and he wanted to retire here, and things happened that made that possible. So he came here. But I met him in Wichita in about 1986, I think. And it was amazing to meet this man. He played jazz theater organ. He actually was able to bridge that gap into that style. He'd studied with Teddy Wilson in Juilliard. And his audition piece for Juilliard was Body and Soul, and he played it in B major, which is a ridiculous key. And when Teddy Wilson asked him why, he said, well, why not? He evidently had no problem with keys and the, you know, the registers of the different keys. So I got to know Billy, and but before I knew him, Mr. Draw and Walter by this time and I would sit in the living room of what is now my home, and we would play Billy's recordings. And we would have dinner on Thursday nights, and I'd play the Wurlitzer at his house for a while. And when I was – it can be taxing. And after I'd played for an hour, I was tired. I would sit on the couch and we would talk, and we would talk about, wouldn't it be nice if we had a trumpet, and wouldn't it be nice if we had a post horn, and wouldn't it be nice if we had this or that rank of pipes. It's sort of sad now because they're all there.
Yeah.
And you know, now that the new the instrument, the opus replaced the previous instrument. But we would listen to Billy's recordings, and he would do something just musically miraculous. And Walter would look at me and he goes, oh, I just hate him. And it was just really cute because he just really had this ability. And so when Mr. Drawn, when Walter gave up possession of his home due to his health, I moved in. And it's the residence that I live in off of McGregor Boulevard. And with it came his albums that he had collected over the years, many of them theater organ recordings of the greats. And this one by Billy included a piece that we used to listen to all the time. And it's Duke Ellington's I'm Beginning to See the Light. And it's just an amazing piece of music, the way he plays it.
All right, let's listen to it. This is I'm Beginning to See the Light. It's a concert recording from Billy Nahl.
Correct.
All right.
Thank you.
When would that have been recorded?
Oh, dear. I don't know. I wish you hadn't asked. I don't know. It was at the Senate Theater in Detroit. And all of my theater organ friends on Facebook will probably post the correct date when they
about when, though? Can you gauge?
Oh,
you know?
I'm going to say 68, 69.
60s, okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, that music affects you. I think I saw chills
during
it.
Yeah.
Do you try to play that or do you play that? I mean, or
Billy's style is complicated.
Yeah, I mean, do you spend some time when nobody's around sort of playing around with it?
Sometime it would be such a – it would pale in comparison. And He just had this gift. It was just amazing. And there are two or three, maybe four really famous theater organists whose style – you can tell his music at the first measure. Hmm. And in that, you know, he arranged all those. He's changing the key of the song every two measures. It just – we would just – Walter and I would sit in the living room and just not believe – what was coming out of the machine because of his prowess. And
you know, during the song, you handed me an old 1938, I think.
This is Billy's
Fort
Billy's
Myers
yearbook.
High School yearbook. And it's, you know, I know a lot of – I have a lot of friends I grew up with who are old-timers. You know, I moved here in 1980 as a kid, so I'm not an old-timer. No matter how long I'm here, I'll never be an old-timer. But the names – I was just looking at the other last names. I'm like, I think these are all people.
You'll see street names in here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Billy handed me this one time. And he – because he retired here and died here in Fort Myers. He was buried in the old Fort Myers Cemetery. He wanted to live in his little town. That's what he wanted. And he actually grew up on Larchmont, which is the road next to the Edison home.
Yeah, right. Oh.
Yep. And one day he said, hey, I got this old yearbook. I don't – I'm only going to keep my senior class book. You can have this one. Wow. So it's full of notes and funny things. And
that's pretty cool. And I my connection to that past is the house that I live in on East Riverside on the other side of downtown was built by J. Colin English in 1924 when he was principal of Fort Myers High School.
Really?
Big circle.
By the way, Peggy March and I from song number two are friends email. And so she will hear this podcast.
Hi, Peggy.
Because I will send her the link. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, she's really cool.
You have all these instruments in your house. Do you play the pianos too? Or are they more decoration? Well, like you said before, you want to put for sale signs on them all so it looks like a showroom floor?
I've had several friends threaten to break into my home and put for sale signs on everything. So it looks like Stephen's Piano Factory outlet. I have a Model B Steinway, which is 7 feet long, which is my go-to instrument. It's like a fine guitar. A guitarist knows what a fine instrument will do, and this does musically things that I want it to do, especially with overtones and harmonics. I have an 1895, it's the oldest thing in the house, George Steck piano that's connected to the Wurlitzer. So when I'm sitting at the Wurlitzer, I can turn on the piano tab and the piano next to me.
So it's electronically connected
then. Sir.
So then you have – wow, I didn't even know that was a thing. I know player pianos are a thing, but –
it's the same principle.
It's a remote-controlled player piano connected to your Wurlitzer.
And then across the room, there's a piano from 1905, which is also connected to the Wurlitzer. It's an upright, plays honky-tonk.
Do you ever freak people out when you're at your house and you start playing and a piano starts playing over there?
Once they get there, nothing freaks them out. I mean, you know, it's like, more crazy stuff. I have the piano owned by the F.W. Woolworth family, a 1927 Steinway that plays with a piano roll. And I need professional help. That's what it really just boils down to.
What about the other antiques and stuff? Is that stuff that you inherited from Mr. Drawn? Is that stuff that you've collected over the years?
I moved into a house with no mortgage. And so I had been a big fan of fans, like in your windows. Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing I collected, brass electric fans. And they spin. And then I moved on to phonographs and Victrolas, and they spin. About this time, someone told me that sometimes being fascinated by spinning things can be a form of autism. So who knows? But I'm okay with that. And but I just saw things that I liked, and you kind of feel like if they're available and you're interested, then you save them. You're saving them. You know, not like hoarding. Everything I have works. If it doesn't operate, then it's hoarding. But I have just enjoyed them. There's some Victrolas. There's a a Seeberg background music system, which is what they used to have in the backs of stores, and it plays 16 and a half RPM records, and it stacks them, and when it's done playing the stack, it mechanically lifts the stack and plays them again.
Have you ever, this is going to be a strange aside, but have you ever, are you familiar with the Alliance for the Arts? They've done over the years the Artist Studio Tour. They've done maybe six or seven of them now. You should throw your hat in that name. You know, it's not necessarily just visual artists. You're a musical artist, and you have a fascinating house that people would probably love to come and
so
look at.
So you're saying let more people know how crazy this
is.
Oh,
absolutely. That's right, No, I've capitalized
on it. Doing this out loud is bad enough.
Do you entertain a lot? It sounds like you kind of are set up for
I don't specifically entertain, but if somebody expresses an interest and knows somebody and calls and they're polite I'm more than welcome, more than happy to have them there. This last week, a candidate for a council seat in Fort Myers stopped by to knock on the door and ended up showing he and his wife through the house. I got a very nice thank you note. But it's really about if you've got the stuff, as I call it, you're kind of obligated to share it.
Yeah.
You're just – otherwise it's just sitting in your living room collecting dust.
So we're about out of time. I've got a couple final questions. Do you have any songs that you will always avoid listening to for some reason?
Oh, my gosh, that I would avoid.
Like turn off if it comes into your ears if you have the power.
Oh, my. You know, I've never occurred to me to turn it off because it's often never on.
Right. You don't submit yourself to much random music.
No.
It sounds
like. I don't, you know, and I'm never in a situation where I would hear anything that was, you know, really, really too modern. There are some songs that, you know, make me laugh and, oh my gosh, I'll that again. But I don't think I've ever turned anything off. As I said, 1980 is about the cutoff for me.
Right.
And with some exceptions. And I don't listen to things that are – I don't listen to stuff that's negative. You know, when I grew up, it was all about love songs and dancing. There was not much else, you
right,
know.
Right, right.
And, you know – things tend to be a little darker, a little more edgy, for lack of a better word.
What happened to the, you know, partial Wurlitzer that you replaced?
Well, the instrument that was in the house had 15 voices, 15 ranks. The builder that installed the replacement instrument kept 9 of those. Hmm. And I was able to sell the others, you know, to enthusiasts that need those parts. But it was just divine inspiration that the guy knew what he was doing and could meld the old parts with the new one. So I've got all of the original pipes plus 9 additional sets.
And you said that your organ, they have an opus? Is that like
an opus number? It's like an opus is
like a
word.
Serial number.
It's like a serial number. Mine's 1773.
Does your cat have an opus?
No. He's just, you know.
Your cat's name is Opus,
right? Opus, okay. Yeah. And he's just there. He sometimes will sit on the bench with me. It's kind of bizarre. He kind of likes the crowds. He's a typical cat. You know, it's just, he does what he wants to do. He makes an appearance when he wants to. He thinks he's in charge.
Well, he might be.
But for the most part, it's all good.
All right. Any final thoughts?
No, I just think it's very nice that you're doing this. It's a nice insight to us locals. And I've learned a little bit about myself just listening today.
All right. Thank you for doing it.
You're welcome.
We make 3 Song Stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio at Florida Gulf Coast University. The show's co-creator and producer is Richard Chin Kui. Tara Callaghan produces our online content. Our executive producer is Chris Duffis. Our theme song was made by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. For this week's parting tune, we're back in the summer of 1998 in the northwest corner of South Carolina. I was there for one of my best childhood friends, Jeremy's wedding, which was at this amazing little wedding spot called the Fred W. Sims Chapel, better known simply as Pretty Place. Just Google it to see how perfectly descriptive that name is. The chapel looks out over thousands of acres of mountainous woods. Anyway, the trip up the mountain was slow and winding, and I was driving another friend's truck because he had already headed up with the wedding party. His girlfriend was riding with me, and we were listening to an album I had recently stumbled across by a North Carolina-based funk band called DAG. It was called Righteous. And while not at all my normal normal groove. It had just hooked me during that stretch of time in my life. I don't listen to it much anymore, but when I hear them, I'm transported back into the cab of Kaus's green Dodge Ram pickup on a beautiful summer day, jamming along the winding road with Joni on the way to one of the coolest weddings I'll ever attend, which culminated at the reception with Jeremy singing faithfully by Journey to his beautiful new bride, Sabrina, accompanying himself on a grand piano. Might have to use that moment as another song story. Damn good times those were. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening.
Next time on Three Song Stories.
So what kind of spices did you put on that egg this morning?
Well, simple spices, a basil and oregano.
What kind of stuff would we find in your novels in terms of exotic cuisines?
your Machiavellian and your segues there. I have to I have to stay 10 steps ahead of you on that one.